Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
President Obama, and it was amazing to see him now As an ex-president, he was relaxed, thoughtful, but very, very clear that what is going on now represents an existential threat to not only our nation, but seriously to the planet. Well, you know, I've been telling everyone that was listening, to go to teachchangepass.org, get involved, to make a difference for 2018. We are the counselor, you're setting in your speech, whatever things you want people to do. We've got to take it up a notch. Absolutely, we do. Come out with us on the weekends when we go to the different districts. But I want to make an appeal to the front page audience that we need African Americans and young folks, especially in the Palmdale area, because a lot of us live out there, and we need to make sure that we're going to turn out our vote. The front page families can really make a difference. Congresswoman Bassio, we are here commemorating the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We're here at a very divisive time in our nation. I want to ask you personally, as an activist and as a lawmaker, what do you draw upon from Dr. King? What do you want us to remember and be inspired by? I want everyone to remember that he was willing to sacrifice everything to bring about change. And unfortunately, the sacrifice resulted in the end of his life, but the change that he brought about is the reason why you and I are able to do what we do today. And we need to remember that, to acknowledge it, to commemorate it, but to really renew our commitment to continue that struggle. And it's beautiful to see labor, faith, and the activist community and lawmakers like yourself here together as a reminder also that Dr. King was about faith, but also about working people. Absolutely. And about bringing people together. Because although we represent a lot of different sectors, our issues and our struggle is really the same. Congresswoman Karen Bass, thank you so much. Thank you.
Hi, this is Corky Robinson, and you're listening to the front page with Dominique DePrima on Radio Free 102.3 KGLH.
Yes, I was there. What a bullet was that. Look it down. Africa is there. You ain't there. This is still what people start calling you name.
Abantu besitizela bebeke mvutini mawuthubheka ngapha nangale ubona khwi khwi ibenzele bebeni yabuya yabuya kanjani
yabuya kanjani lawo
nekuphikisane
nabantu wena mfana
yabuya kanjani
wena mfana
kumele wenze lutho ngabantu into mabeyithanda
yona yasho leyo ndoda yathi zobuya iAfrika
yathi zobuya
iwile Afrika iwile baba
yathi zobuya
iwile Afrika iwile mphela majo
iwile Afrika
yathi
zobuya iwile Afrika
iwile
Afrika
iwile ngempela
iwile Afrika
bomnyama nomhlobo
bomnyama nomhlobo
yathi zobuya
intando yeni
yathi zobuya
Iwili afri,
iwili afri,
somnyama nomhlobo,
somnyama nomhlobo,
nentando yeni,
intando yeni,
yathi zobuya,
iwili afri,
iwili afri,
iwili afri,
somnyama nomhlobo,
somnyama nomhlobo,
nentando yeni,
intando yeni,
South Africa,
South Africa,
yathi zobuya,
iwili afri,
to all faith,
to all races,
my
democracy,
sole chatu tuna,
sole chatu
tuna,
South Africa,
America made. Go to hell because
challenge them for their grand kids to have a revolution of values. The rest of Mr. Kennedy is shift from a theme warrior society to a person first society. It might go ahead because we have made the necessary shift from having our loyalty just be sectional rather than extra-biblical. We might go to hell if we don't repent and understand what Dan said when he challenged us by helping us to understand that we are caught in an inescapable network of neutrality, tied in a single bondage of destiny, and what affects one by which we are put all the direction of the world.
It's the front page of Dominique Prima on Radio Free 102.3 KJLA. Because we know we must work to realize the dream that Martin Luther King had envisioned. That dream was for a just and peaceful world. He believed his dream could be realized, also his dream said, by a true revolution of values, which would restructure the architecture of society from a culture of violence to a culture of nonviolence. And when I came to Atlanta, I was president of the FCLC in the early 2000s. We had our convention here. And I thought back then, the 1967, April 5th, and they're delivered beyond Vietnam. Another one particular anecdote that is which is truly unfortunately today. And what I was, I have to be very honest, I can't think about violence without stating that the greatest prevail of violence is my own mission. The greatest prevail. These United States. So interesting now because we are dealing with guns. We as a family have been speaking about it for years. But we didn't know it was that from young students, high school students, would lead a movement like there are today. The last time we saw students in high school meetings was 55 years ago in Birmingham, where 3,000 students were arrested. But there are three movements I want to briefly talk about. I can't say enough about our brothers and sisters in Black Lives Matter. This particular day is the day of sacrament. We saw young men going in, holding a cell phone. Justice must be done somehow, some way, some day, or really right now. But our brothers and sisters of Black Lives Matter, they're not just black, they're white, they're Latino on the same. And they are determined to make a change. Secondly, God is talking about the Me Too movement. He was a young lady who has always been calling for the women's demonstration to hear their movement. When you look at the fact that millions of women focus and determine now. Gender equality will become real in our society, and it won't be long. Then I go back to the children. Who did not tell the name what he said? We didn't have to do that. In fact, in 2016, the last year that President Obama was in the White House, we went to visit the president. Reese and I, Andre and Yolanda, we went to visit to see the statue of our dad, the bust in the Oval Office. Was it still there? Hasn't yet provided any inspiration
Thank you.
African Americans and the most prosperous and advanced of all the descendants of Southern Africa. And that border has chosen paradigm. I'm the only one that has been African Americans, not just ordinary, but those in reach of God. So I'm
Thank you. I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force! Members of the Citizens Council, I am a simple soldier. And as a soldier, I see things simply. I don't say all humans are evil simply because their skin is white. No! But our great lawgiver tells us that never, never will the human have the eighth divine faculty for being able to distinguish between evil and good. The only good human is a dead human. But those fortunate enough to remain alive will have the privilege of being used by our revered Minister of Science, the good Dr. Zayas.
Around
her
tormenting a senseless military adventure.
Well, the prison zone has been closed for centuries, and rightly so. However, we now have evidence that that vast barren area is inhabited. By what or by whom, we don't know. But they live, live they do. They must eat. Now we must replenish the lands that were ravaged by the humans with new improved feeding grounds. And these grounds we can obtain in the once forbidden zone. It's therefore our holy duty to put a fear upon it, to weather it, to put the marks of our guns and our wheels and our flags upon it. To expand the boundaries of our ineluctable power, and to invade.
You're listening to the Marty Smith Show.
Intellectual is that we have responsibilities and no power. I think I'd better talk to Nancy. Do you have chocolate? No, of course you don't. But I do.
If we had that power here in our hands, we'd be worse than them.
I don't agree. The Reddits are cruel because they're stupid. All bone and no brain.
Yeah, my dear, I wish you would not talk like that. Somebody is liable to hear.
Love!
What are you doing here?
Taylor?
No, I'm not Taylor. My name's Brent.
You can't.
That's impossible.
In a whole lifetime devoted to the scientific study of humans, I've only found one other like you who could
talk. Taylor.
He's alive. Have you seen him?
Where?
I don't know where. I'm trying to find him. No longer stay around here. I'm starting to care.
Oh, now, we loved Taylor. He was a fine, a unique specimen. Why, if it had not been for Dale again, he would still be here. A stuffed specimen in the Great Hall of the Vance Museum with his two friends.
With his two friends? Oh, I don't plan to stay around here quite that long. Look, can you get me some food, some water? I'm at, so at least I have some idea where I'm heading.
But you want that taken care of, too?
I'll get the map.
Now, give a look up here. Okay, it's towards the north. This was the last place that we saw Taylor and Nancy.
What is that damn stuff?
You wouldn't know if I told you. Don't bring that. Among other things, I'm a train vet.
Oh, great. Yeah, go on. Taylor was riding with Nova here, between the lake and the sea.
They're heading deep into the territory we call the...
Yes, I know the Forbidden Zone.
Who told you that?
Huh? That, your glorious leader back there.
Cornelius, open the door.
Put the things away.
Open it.
Oh, Dr. Zayas, how nice. Well, we were just about to have something to eat.
Not until I talk some sense to that headstrong wife of yours. Where is she?
We're there, Dr. Zayas.
Has there been an accident?
Cornelius hit me. For my bad behavior at the meeting.
I don't blame him.
Well, I'm not resented, but he nails me clipping.
Enough of this nonsense. Are you so blind, you two psychologists, that you're unaware that we are on the verge of a grave crisis? You heard the Ursa speech.
Militaristic type.
Grandpa, perhaps. But now he has the incident he requires to go on a rampage of Congress. But that is appalling.
To remain silent while this bully Ursus is permitted to destroy everything in his path is no longer possible.
As Minister of Science, it is my duty to find out whether some other form of life exists.
Where are you going?
Into the Forbidden Zone with Ursus.
Another manhunt, Doctor?
Someone or something has outwitted the intelligence of the gorillas.
That shouldn't be difficult.
We apes have learned to live in innocence. Let no one, be it man or some other creature, dare to contaminate that innocence. Why?
You're listening to the Marty Smith Show.
Blimey, old chap, who turned the radio up?
Everybody wants to listen to the beast, advertise the future. from your position. They might take pretty fitness and I put it in a van. If them brought down one, they'll find more strong.
Into you know, the institution that basically took on the Supreme Court and, you know, one court case after another that, you know, take to eventually to Brown versus Board of Education decision. So Howard is an enormously important institution, and in ways was there during its sort of glory years in the 30s of building it into what it was. And then Morehouse College called him. Actually, they asked Thurman first for Thurman to come and be president. Thurman didn't want to run Morehouse College. So then they turned around and asked Mays, and he did do it. So then he had this long as president of Morehouse College. And Morehouse has had a bunch of great presidents, but Mays is still the special one out of that whole run. And, of course, he was president there in the 40s when King was a student there. And so for King, listening to Mays give a chapel address every week, that is a deeply formative experience. And it also is something of another father figure. King loves his own father, but Mays in some ways is more like it's all there with Mays, the intellectualism, the commitment to a certain kind of social justice of politics, of theological progressivism. King called his father a fundamentalist for his whole career. It's not quite fair, but that does say something, that he always, there's some alienation between the father and the son with regard to how the theology is sort of construed. And Mays is much more his sort of exemplar. So Mays is a very important figure in this whole story.
And there are many more people we could talk about. And in fact, before we wrap up, I want to bring up Pauli Murray. You've done shows on Pauli Murray, and I think it's important and fascinating. But before we get to Pauli Murray, looking at Benjamin Mays, Howard Thurman, and Mordecai White Johnson, the three people we really focused on concerning the Black social gospel, did Martin Luther King Jr.'s work, obviously it was built upon their work and their ideas, did it advance beyond what they already laid out?
Yes. King himself, King's already famous in the 1950s, and even he isn't, there's a lot of talk about Gandhian disruption, but he didn't actually do any until after SNCC is formed in 1960, and now, young people are getting arrested. Because King is peaceable and deeply kindly, and the idea that he's going to lead people harmed, getting killed, that really tied him up in the late 1950s. He gave, fabulous speeches, and then, the boycott in Montgomery was a success. But then they really got stuck. So it's only in the early 60s that King is able to kind of face up to what this is going to mean, that he's got to be willing to sort of lead a movement in which you're going into just the most hateful cities you can find and raising hell in them and maybe getting people injured and maybe getting them killed, and that's what it's going to take. And, of course, that is a step beyond any of his mentors. I mean, they did not do that. Not only that, but his own home, the headquarters, is in Atlanta, and they never did. They didn't really do this stuff in Atlanta, and that's partly because the pressure of people like Mays who just say, don't do that here. We'll take care of Atlanta. So there's something underneath all this of a kind of Black aristocracy in Atlanta itself. The King has to be able to get beyond, including sort of just getting beyond sort of influence of his own father, who's still sort of a major figure in Atlanta. For example, as early as you can get, back in Montgomery, in the Bronx boycott, in 1956, Mays at first was siding with Daddy King, who said, come home, it's not worth getting thrown in prison. In Montgomery. And with King, he had a conscience about that. He said, I couldn't live with myself if I were to, cut and run from this struggle. I've got to see this through. Now, Mays, to his credit, then did say, the younger King is right. And so it may, you know, got on the right side of it. But that's just that right there is sort of telling how Kenny is having a move beyond even what any of his mentors did. Now, Johnson does cheer him every step of the way. I mean, Johnson never puts up any opposition to him. He never says to him, oh, you're going too fast or anything like that. But Kenny does accelerate the pace. I mean, he ends up doing things, and especially at the end. At the end, Kenny was the most radical person in all of it, in all of SCLC. I mean, he dragged SCLC to Chicago. He dragged him into Poor People's Campaign at the end. I mean, he had the entire executive staff against him. So by the end, Kenny is more out there, more radical than even James Bevel, who was his usual barometer of going too far.
What was behind the radicalism?
The sheer limits of how little you actually change when you pass a civil rights bill and a Voting Rights Act, it got to Kenny that we've come nowhere near breaking white supremacy. I mean, white supremacy is a structure of power based on privilege that presumes to define what's normal and that holds the vast majority of black people down and doesn't take any real responsibility for the accumulated consequences of 246 years of slavery and 100 years of Jim Crow and just what that ends up meaning for black Americans. It just weighs on him in the early 60s, mid-60s. Just how the sheer weight of that and how little actually has changed in American society, even though they've won these spectacular victories. And when he would talk like this, people like Andy Young would be, get upset with him, say, oh, please, we've been incredibly successful here. Why? You can't take on the burden of all of American history, on one little organization. And the king, no, he does bear it. And so this is why he can never take a vacation or just take a break from it. He just feels so deeply the burden of confronting and interrogating the consequences, the ravages of American racism and white supremacy, and he's doing everything he can to try to break through, to try to build a culture of atonement in this country for what it is this country has done.
I want to end on Pauli Murray again, and we've done programs about Pauli Murray. Pauli Murray, if people listen to the show frequently enough, will know that she presented at a law student at the time, which would become the legal underpinnings for overturning Brown versus Board of Education. She became a very important legal mind in the world in the second half of the 20th century. The idea of intersectionality today you could probably trace back to Pauli Murray. Pauli Murray is somebody born female but would identify as a male, didn't have the language that we use today, the people call himself a transgender, but would identify as a male later on in life. Also became a minister. Can you talk to me about that last part? When we did a show on Pauli Murray, we didn't really talk about the religious aspect a whole lot.
Well, near the end of her life, in her last year, she wrote an autobiography, and the book didn't really come together. And it's only then that she started to realize, oh, the reason this book isn't coming together the way my earlier book, Proud Shoes, did, is that I still don't really understand the meaning of my life. She only came into it at the end. At the age of 63, she leaves her chair at Brandeis University, which she had, desperately coveted for years, leaves that in order to go to General Theological Seminary in New York in order to become an Episcopal priest, because it turns out, as she came to realize, that she was on a spiritual journey all these years and really didn't know it, didn't realize that spirituality that was in her was the actual sort of story of her life. And it wasn't just the politics, and it wasn't just all of the legal arguments and all that, and the struggle for civil rights and the like.
And is it the social gospel that she's clinging to?
Very much. I mean, of course, the social gospel can be first draft of Breaking White Supremacy, I had Pauli Murray in every chapter. And for a while, I was always showing what got her shut out this time or that time, you know, because she's always there. She's that. She's alone of all her vets at, you know, at Howard Law School in 1943. And is just always there and yet always being shut out. So for a while, I got her in every chapter. Then I thought, that's shutting her out as well. So I ended up putting her until the very last chapter and then putting her entire story in the last chapter and making it a commentary on the entire book, you know, that just transpired. And that allowed me sort of to catch up with her, because it's only in the latter part of her life, when she's willing to give up her coveted academic care, that she realizes, no, I have been on a spiritual journey. Now, one of the things that kept her from realizing it was that she was Episcopalian. And so she's got this, you know, she's in a clerical church, and she's got sort of a clerical idea about what religious people are like. You know, it's churchy, and they're ministers. And being Episcopalian means she can't be a minister, except that, of course, that changed just in time for her. So there she is at the age of 63, finally, studying
General Seminary,
and of course, Brookie's been become a priest, and has spent the latter part of her life as an Episcopal priest.
We're almost out of time, but I kind of want to get you to reflect on this point, and that's why I thought it was important to talk about Pauli Murray here at the end, because I think Pauli Murray, when you think about the idea of today, intersectionality, and generations, that Pauli Murray, I think, they're one of the legal philosophy that inspired, whether it be gay and lesbian and transgender rights movements, whether it be movements for people with disabilities, whatever it is, it was Pauli Murray's work, and also Pauli Murray would say that this should be applied in other places or through society, that makes me think of today. And just as one little example would be Black Lives Matter, which is pretty much a secular movement. But that said, very steep in intersectionality thought. But I can't help seeing, not just Black Lives Matter, but almost all of the social justice movements today, just, you know, the social justice issues, this is all very much connected and rooted in the Black social gospel.
Yes, that's right. That's one concern I have, just to sort of convey how much that is the case. We have to deal with the kind of stereotype about what this was, that it's something that's, you know, that doesn't resonate. And even, you know, the imagery we have about King and who he was, you know, if you really understand who King was, he's so much more resonant and relevant than it seems. Because he isn't just this, you know, icon of white liberalism, right, which was what we've turned him into for so long. Murray is someone who I think radiates to the present day as brilliantly as ever, because she's always about talking about the way different sites and types of oppression intersect. And you just can't break it ever down to kind of one factor, anything, that life is morally complex, and there are different ways in which people, groups are oppressed, and then there are ways in which some people who are themselves oppressed also will function as oppressors to others. And that has to be sort of be named for what it is, and you need sort of tools to be able to talk about how that works. And so that sort of aspect of her work, which isn't just her work, of course, that's just the story of her own life, just going for a whole career, where she spent years wondering, what am I being excluded, what's the reason I'm being excluded for this time? Is it because I'm female, or I'm black, or I'm queer, or what, you know? And half the time, she didn't know. Working on that, that was her own life story. Even the issue of being as influenced as she is by white culture and having white people in her family tree, and so she's no mixed race. That itself was plenty to deal with. And I think all of that makes her a figure today that, when I teach her class, and that's when we get to Pauli Murray, all I have to do is just walk into class. I don't have to worry about how will I get this discussion going, because she just radiates so brilliantly in today's context.
Gary, go
historian is the Reinhold Niebuhr Professor of Social Ethics at Union Theological Seminary, also Professor of Religion at Columbia University, author of the book Breaking White Supremacy, Martin Luther King Jr. and the Black Gospel. Gary Gordon, thank you for that.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks very much.
And after the Letters and Politics, the show is produced by Deanna Martinez. Kristen Thomas is our engineer. You can find archives of our previous shows online at kcfa.org. I'm Joe Rich, and I thank you for listening.
Wait a minute.
intelligence, we should speak aloud, and one at a time.
Are we to understand that you are in the UVA?
Yes, yes, 2 days ago. What sights did you see? You're talking. Well, certainly we can talk. It's a rather primitive accomplishment. We use it when we must. When we pray. When we sing to our God.
Hearing that thing out there, an atomic bomb, your God?
You don't understand, Mr. Brent. The bomb is a holy weapon of peace.
Holy weapon of peace.
You are home alone.